The government officially shut down last week. President Trump has federalized National Guard troops from other states and ordered them into Portland, an act that has been temporarily blocked by a judge. And while the country is reeling from ICE raids and attacks on the families of our most vulnerable populations, the loss of billions of dollars in federal funds, the firing of thousands of federal workers, the loss of more than 300,000 jobs for black women alone, threats to Medicaid, and the so-called war on woke in schools, Trump is now posting racist AI-generated propaganda videos on social media. And to help us sort out all this chaos we're witnessing is my guest, Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon. Welcome back to The Exchange, sir.
Thank you, Mike. And that's a lot of chaos to try to sort out.
It is indeed. So, Senator, we do have a lot to discuss, but let's start with the government being shut down. What does that mean to Oregonians?
Well, certainly it is a Republican effort to lock in these massive cuts to basic health care for Oregon's families. In fact, 110,000 Oregonians receive the tax credits that are in place now, and they will receive something very different here when they see the new estimates coming out at the middle of next week. And what they're projected to see is an increase on average of about $1,300 a person, or a 68% increase. So we're not talking about inflation of 2 to 3%. We're talking about 68% or somewhere about that. And it's not just people who buy insurance on the exchange. Expected double-digit increases for people who buy regular policies directly. And since many people may not be able to afford policies and will go without insurance, that has bad ramifications both for the health of the individuals, because they may not go to the doctor when needed, but also for the revenue stream that goes to our clinics and our hospitals. So essentially, what we've seen is this agenda since January of families lose and billionaires win, cancel health care to fund tax cuts for billionaires, cancel child nutrition to fund tax cuts for billionaires, run up $30 trillion in additional debt to fund tax breaks for billionaires. And that's a terrible agenda in a republic. How does that happen? Shouldn't it be a families thrive and the rich pay their fair share?
Well, Senator, how do we get the government back on track?
There are a lot of pressures right now in terms of the government reopening, because three quarters of the folks who are affected by this increase, this huge increase in the cost of health care, are in states Trump won. So there's a lot of feedback to the House members and to the Senate members on both sides of the aisle saying, fix this health care. And in addition, we're starting to see that in the shutdown, folks are calling in sick to control air traffic controllers. And that starts to become an imposition. That's the thing that actually ended the last shutdown, because they created pressure that was affecting Americans across the board. And so we're going to see increasing pressure, both because of the outrageous nature of this attack on health care, and because of the collateral impacts of a shutdown. You know, the Trump administration, the key architect of their plan, his name's Russell Vogt, he's head of Office of Management and Budget. He said his goal was to traumatize government workers. He said this when he was writing the Project 2025, to have them, government workers, feel so victimized they don't even want to come to work. Well, that attitude of attacking workers, that's exactly what they're engaged in right now, of traumatizing workers, which of course is traumatizing millions of families across the country.
Well, Senator, so help me understand, what is the America that your counterparts in Congress envision?
Well, I think it's the vision projected primarily through cable television to far-right networks that, well, many of our Trumpian base listens to every night, that says everything's just fine. They don't talk about the attacks on due process or freedom of speech, or freedom of the press, or freedom of assembly. They don't talk about the fact that the Justice Department has been weaponized as an attack force on Trump's political opponents. They're certainly not talking about his goal of being able to send the military in everywhere when there's actually nothing that justifies it. And so they're kind of living in a bubble, and this is feels so Orwellian, just like, how could this happen in America? I don't think it could happen if we had the regular broadcast world from 30 years ago, where most Americans were getting the same news through broadcasts and we had a fair content doctrine. But we don't have that now under cable. And social media certainly doesn't employ that. So Americans who live in urban areas and rural areas are not just getting different interpretations, they're getting different basic presentation of what the facts are. And if your base, your electoral base, is coming from that point of view, then the members who have stayed on through Trump's second version of presidency feel like, well, they're obliged to it. And so instead of honoring their oath to the Constitution and those freedoms that are embedded in it, they've kind of taken an oath of loyalty to the president, not what is supposed to happen under our Constitution.
Well, to your point, on Tuesday, the Department of Homeland Security, Secretary of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem, visited Portland and met with Governor Tina Kotek. On that same day, she told Jesse Waters on Fox News, quote, "What is shocking to me about these leftist politicians is how they ignore the people who elected them, jeopardize their safety, and continue to disrespect our law enforcement officers. One of the things I've been dealing with all day here in Portland is a bunch of pansies elected into political office who won't make a decision to keep their citizens safe," end quote. Senator, how do you build a common ground of communications and understanding with leaders who appear to be so disingenuous?
It's really hard. All the interactions with Secretary Noem have been ones in which she's extremely hostile. She's not the least interested in knowing that or having witnessed that when I went to ICE twice about a week and a half ago, what did I see? I saw three women standing outside with signs with flowers on them or, just happiness. And she's not willing to recognize and look at the videos where peaceful protesters have been attacked by the federal forces that were already here and acknowledge that their goal is to create a riot and essentially pretend there is violence. I'm still struck by this additional strategy witnessed a few nights ago in which the federal agents asked the protesters to move back three blocks. They did. They moved back as the line of federal agents came forward. And there wasn't interaction between them except for verbal conversations that were probably sometimes loud and sometimes insulting, but that's the free speech element. After they had marched them three blocks, they took a line, they had videographers behind them to record it. And what did they do? They created a fake riot. They throw down tear gas, they throw down pepper balls. They had flashbangs that sound like gunfire going off. And the net effect of filming all of that makes it look like they're somehow dispersing a riot when in fact there was nothing but peaceful protest. That idea of our government is inventing a completely fictionalized situation is terrifying. That they're going to those lengths to try to justify deploying troops across America. I mean, under the standard of the law, there are big barriers to using troops, the military, against Americans. There has to be an insurrection. There has to be a rebellion. Rebellion, a large, well-organized, weaponized attack to overthrow the government. There's nothing, three women standing with a sign outside ICE is hardly a rebellion. And that's why the district judge said this is absurd and rejected their request. But look, the judges often give great deference on issues of security to interpretations of the president. And that's what makes this so dangerous. If either the circuit court or the Supreme Court say, well, it doesn't matter what the objective facts are, as long as the president calls it a rebellion, we're going to allow him to deploy troops. We are deep into a militarized authoritarian state. We're already in big trouble, but that would be another big step into the nightmare for which we may not recover for decades.
Well, Senator, there's an irony in the fact that Trump is able to federalize the National Guard and send them into what he calls war-ravaged Portland. He was impeached for inciting an insurrection, which resulted in the January 6 riot that ravaged the Capitol, literally, and violently attacked law enforcement officers, literally. And the Senate, the place where you reside, among a elite population of the most powerfully elected leaders in our country, that Senate acquitted him. Now, as president, He's in charge of federal law enforcement and the military. So what is the responsibility that the Senate has in this predicament that's facing Portland and other major cities?
Well, in that trial you refer to, every Democrat voted to convict. 7 Republicans voted to convict. So it's only because there was a supermajority requirement that the president was not convicted. The majority of the House and the majority of the Senate both held him accountable, but you need a supermajority in the Constitution in the Senate. Well, that is, it is a deep irony, by the way, to your point. I mean, here he essentially urged on what would count as a rebellion. It was organized, it was well-armed, and it was trying to overthrow the government and prevent the counting of the presidential electoral college votes. So that probably meets the test, as opposed to a few nice people holding signs outside of ICE. But the degree to which new boundaries are being broken just plays the fact that Trump has no fundamental understanding or respect for the separation of powers, the checks and balances. And those who have studied how democracies become strongman authoritarian states say that you need 3 elements. You need a rubber stamp Congress. Check. We have that. You need a Supreme Court that delivers more power to the executive. Check. We have that. And you need a fiercely aggressive authoritarian personality at the head of the executive branch. We have that as well. And that is the enormous danger we're in. I hope some of my Republican colleagues will step back from it all and said they've had enough. They took an oath to the Constitution. They're going to be on the side of the vision that our nation was founded on and has been upheld. This is the most perilous moment for our Constitution and our republic since the Civil War. It shouldn't be a partisan issue to defend the role of Congress, the checks and balances in our Constitution that we're all sworn to protect.
Okay, well, I have one final question, Senator. What are Democrats doing to counter this chaos?
Well, what I've been saying in my town halls when people ask what can they do and what can I do, I say we have to have both an inside game by the electeds and we have to have outside efforts. And there's 2 things that the scholars say are needed. You need to have a fight in the first year. Why do you need to have a fight? Well, and by fight, I mean a moment like we're in right now with the government being shut down because the Republican majority wants to savage healthcare, has chosen to savage healthcare and won't agree to fix it. And the reason you need to have that is because otherwise the message is inherently, well, it must not be too different or too wrong because no one's opposing it fiercely. And so there needs to be fierce opposition. And yes, certainly we did everything we could to slow down the nominations, to slow down the legislation, to build bipartisan support against the big, ugly betrayal of an act that created this healthcare problem. But it was a simple majority process under a special filibuster-free pathway called reconciliation. So we used all these tools and our voices and our town halls, but we're in the minority. So then you need the courts. Okay, well, the courts are doing a modest job, but as things get to the Supreme Court, it seems like all of these shadow docket, a fancy way of saying they didn't hold a full hearing and they didn't explain their reasoning and they just made a decision on that favored increasing executive power. That's not working so well. So there needs to be a big turnout on October 18th on the No Kings Day. There needs to be a just passionate engagement in whatever way to hold electeds accountable. I tell people, you know, fiercely hold us accountable. You know, send us letters and messages and protest outside our offices and remind us that we're not doing enough. Have us keep thinking about what else we can do. But then the second thing you need is you need to win the next election. And why is that? That's because an authoritarian president will change the rules for the elections and lock in authoritarian control. And we see Trump trying to do this in 3 ways. One is consolidating the voter database in order to better manipulate it and purge the database to influence outcome. Second is to attack vote by mail. And that's because vote by mail protects against election day shenanigans, where you decrease the vote in places you don't want to vote by moving the precinct, voting location, putting it where there's no parking, understaffing it, having the machines break down and sending intimidators out to the line. And then the third factor that they're pursuing is increased gerrymandering in order to try to control the House of Representatives disproportionately to the actual vote of the people.
Right.
So exactly what's predicted for authoritarian power. This is straight out of the playbook, and that's why we need to have fierce engagement now, but we have to win the next election and send a big no.
It's up to us, the people. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mike.